Well, 100 years ago this weekend, the leader of the Irish Parliamentary Party, John Redmond, delivered a historic speech calling on Irish men to join the British Army and fight in the First World War. The speech came to define his legacy. It was delivered at Woodenbridge, County Wicklow, and that legacy is still the subject of debate, with the Taoiseach supporting calls for a monument in his honour to be erected in Dublin, and one Labour TD saying Unpust was wrong to issue a stamp commemorating him. But back in September 1914, Redmond had just seen Home Rule signed into law and felt Ireland should unite for war on the Western Front to repay the then Liberal Prime Minister, Herbert Asquith. RTÉ's Donal Byrne has been looking at the debate around Redmond's motivation and his political legacy.
And I say to you, go on drilling and make yourselves efficient at the work, and then account yourselves as men, not only in Ireland itself, but wherever the fighting line extends in defence of right, of freedom and religion in this war.
With this exhortation, John Redmond committed himself to what would become a major part of his political legacy and encouraged many Irish men to fight in World War I. Buoyed by the enactment of the Home Rule Bill, he was not to know that the scale of the war, and in particular its duration, would end his dream of Irish independence.
It looks very naive to us now. It really was pie in the sky to think that the mere fact of soldiers fighting in adjacent trenches was going to forge a new Irish national identity.
Dermot Mulledy is Redmond's biographer.
But it was wishful thinking. Many people in Ireland at the time were guilty of wishful thinking. We had Owen McNeill, when the Irish Volunteers had started, he wanted the Irish National Volunteers to emulate the Ulster Volunteers, and he talked about joining hands with the Orange Men. We had Pearse talking about it is good to see arms in the hands of Irishmen. It didn't matter whether they were Orange Men or Nationalists. The mere fact of Irishmen having arms, even if they were about to slaughter each other, for Pearse, like, that was okay, as long as the earth was fertilised by blood. So there was a lot of fantasy around at the time. Perhaps we can excuse Redmond's particular brand of fantasy.
Emeritus Professor of Modern Irish History at UCD, Ronan Fanning, believes Redmond had many fine qualities as a politician, but was ultimately an unlucky one.
I think he was a very fine parliamentarian. I think one of his achievements is to bring the Irish Parliamentary Party together after the Parnellite split. I think he was a man of great integrity, a man of great honesty, but a man who didn't realise how much the political climate within which he had to operate was changing when it comes to 1914. And he's also an ill man, and he dies after, he dies of heart failure in 1918. So I would say, above all, he's unlucky. And he was, I think, badly treated by Asquith. Some historians have spoken about Asquith's treatment of Redmond as being one of the more discreditable aspects of his premiership, that he was evasive. But politics, as Mrs. Thatcher, you say, is a rough old trade. And I think Redmond took too much for granted. Somebody also said of Redmond, I think it was true too, that he always played the game and always lost it. And he didn't realise that when it came to 1912-14 and the Ulster Unionist opposition to the Home Rule Bill, that the British had changed the rules of the game and the violence was what was going to work.
Mary Green is John Redmond's great-granddaughter and welcomes the renewed interest in what she describes as his neglected legacy.
It's really nice now to see that he is being spoken about again and events are being analysed again. I mean, it was almost like he was written out of history. That's how it felt to the family, really, and that was a source of great sadness to my father and my uncle, the fact that it what he did didn't seem to matter, although he did have a very great achievement. And certainly all the years I was at Trinity in the 1970s, I would never really have felt comfortable saying to anybody that I was related to him. And now I would. So there's been a shift, really.
Why did you feel that?
I just felt that there was a sort of animosity towards him, I think. I think there was a lot of feeling about the First World War and the Irish involvement in the First World War. And you know, there's obviously a number of people who feel that that was the wrong decision on his part to call for people to join up. I think there are other people who felt the Home Rule Bill, as it was on the statute book in 1914, could never have been. And I think, you know, there's a body of people who felt, well, a lot more was achieved through the 1916 Easter Rising. And His contribution was not really that important. That was what changed things.
Do you think, given the events that unfolded later, that he was terribly disappointed at the end of his life about the way events had unfolded?
Very much so, very much so. And I think he said to a priest who was with him at the time of his death that he was a broken man. You know, he could have made a lot more money being a barrister and had a very successful career, but he actually gave his life to politics and gave his life to Ireland. And where did it leave him?
How do you feel about that lack of recognition up to this point?
Sadness, I think, is probably the best word to describe it rather than bitterness. Sadness. And sadness that my father and his brother didn't live to see the shift that is happening now.
Jamie Ryan is part of the Redmond family line and still lives at the Redmond home, Ballytrent House, in Wexford.
He was an extraordinary politician, a great orator. He could captivate a crowd, I believe, drew huge crowds to his political speeches. He was a remarkable politician. I think a monument to John Redmond in Dublin would be very appropriate. Love to see it.
But what was the ultimate motivation for the speech at Wooden Bridge? Dermot Mulledy again.
The underlying motive behind it was that when the signing of the Home Rule Bill onto the statute by the King had taken place, for him that meant that the British had stood by their word, they had honoured their word, and Ireland now owed them a debt of honour in return. And this was why Irishmen should join up. So this was his concept of honour. The fact that the British democracy had stood by its word to the Irish democracy. As he said himself, he had promised many, many times in speeches for many years that when Ireland was given home rule, Ireland would be first in the ranks of those who would be loyal to the British Empire.
However, Ronan Fanning says the Home Rule deal was always a flawed compromise.
And there is proof of that. That isn't counterfactual, because when the British do return to the subject and they postpone it until the last possible moment, until 12 months after the war is over, and they spin it out for as long as they can, and then they simply repeal the Act, and they say we've got to produce another Act, and they produce another Government of Ireland Act, which is the Government of Ireland Act 1920, which gives a Home Rule Parliament to Belfast and a Home Rule Parliament to Dublin. And they know by that stage that the Home Rule Parliament in Dublin is not going to satisfy Sinn Féin and isn't going to work. Lloyd George, even before the general election in 1918, when Sinn Féin displaced the Irish Parliamentary Party as the majority party of Irish nationalists, Lloyd George is saying privately to Liberal backbenchers, he's saying, I'm going to have to talk to Sinn Féin.
And that was historian Professor Ronan Fanning finishing that report by Donald Byrne.